Welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me is Mr. Matt the Minion. Matt, feels like we were just here, doesn't it?
It does, for some reason.
Yeah, so this is part two of our show with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concept. Jeff Gonzalez? That Jeff dude from Trident Concepts. It is now the weekend after shot, and through the magic of radio, we are still on an airplane, just going the different direction. Are we on an airplane now?
No, I think now we're probably sitting in the airport, perhaps enjoying a tasty beverage, because we're taking, like, the red eye.
Oh, that's right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think we're sitting in the airport.
Yeah, okay.
Right, now.
That's good to know. It was literally $1,200 cheaper for us to stay until Sunday instead of leaving the Friday after the show, so... I'd like to tell you how the AVN Awards are, but I don't know, because we haven't gone to them yet. Not that we're going there. We're not, I swear. Anyway, just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt, at least for now, until they hear this show. Colt, the legend continues. Anyway, more with Jeff Gonzalez. Jeff, are you still there?
I sure am.
All right, perfect. So I know it seems like we were just talking about this, but... I was explaining my terrible YouTube video, not based on any actual science that I ran, but anyway, I taped up the lower three quarters of my shooting glasses so that I could shoot the way that I always shoot, but could not visually reference the gun at all. And accuracy dropped, you know, I want to say 80%, at least, unless I'm doing my math wrong, it was more than that. But and we averaged it out and blah, blah, blah. And the only reason I bring it up is because, you know, I was talking with, go figure, Rob Pincus, and, you know, I really felt like he and I were speaking a different language. I ended up talking with Craig Douglas to talk to him about it, you know, and once again, his definition was different than the definition that I've run into. Todd Lewis Green posted an article where he referenced Ken Hackathorn, who said something different than everyone else said. And it occurred to me that the whole point shooting thing, and I'm sorry to bring it up again. And
that's okay.
Well, I'm apologizing to everyone in general because apparently it's just brought all sorts of fun people out. But apparently it's one of those areas where everyone uses the word, but no one's quite talking about the same thing when they do it. Have you run into anything else like that in the industry, just off the top of your head? Or it seems like a semi-common occurrence almost, just with different topics.
I do think that there are other subjects or topics that have a very similar kind of thing, theory to it, like, you know, how people use the various ready positions and crap like that. But before I forget, I wanted to say something about your experiment and whatnot.
Yeah.
So... while I was on active duty, you know, obviously shooting was something that I enjoyed and I excelled at, and I can remember doing very well on all the various quals and whatnot. And we were out at our primary training facility out on the East Coast that we send our guys to, and one of the teams that I had some really, really great shooters in there. They really forced me to shoot hard as well. You know, obviously when you shoot around people that are better than you, you improve.
Right.
And I remember we were doing really good. We're like halfway through the trip, and I'm sitting there with my swim buddy, great guy, strong dude, strong shooter. And I was like, hey, Riz, I gotta ask you something. He's like, what? It's like, when you're shooting, what are you looking at? And he was like, I'm looking at the front sight. Why? And I'm like, because I'm not, and yeah. I'm worried that I'm doing it wrong. So at that point, he got really serious. And I remember he sat up because we were sitting on the couches, and he sat up and he looked at me and he's like, do not tell me that you're not looking at your sights and that you're shooting better than me. I do not want to hear that. And I was like, I think that's exactly what's happening. And it was like this watershed moment for me. So I was shooting where I had, you know, basically my technique was the same. There wasn't any difference. This is what we talk about as far as the subject of your focus. Are you focused on the target? Are you focused on the front sight?
Yeah.
And for me, for the early part of my naval career, I was shooting by focusing on the target. And when I shifted to, you know, actually being focused on my site, and I do have a problem like you with my visual acuity looking at the site. So I feel your pain because I have something very similar. And through my own discovery, as I went through the rest of my career and to this point, you know, the fluctuation between those, I've determined not to be that relevant.
Right.
You know, during training, we really emphasize folks to have a very, very, I would say, very sharp focus on that front sight.
Right.
And then as you move forward, as you continue to move, we used to call it back in the day. This is why I chuckle lightly, because way back in the day, okay, so when was this? This was back in like the early 90s,
right.
Early to mid 90s that I discovered this. And early on in the training company, we started doing something that was very parallel to that, where we were teaching people to look past their sights, to align their sights up correctly, but look past it at the target and focus on the target.
Yeah.
And the reason why we were doing that was, you know, we wanted folks to, I'm a big proponent of familiarization. If you're familiar with it, then when you find yourself in a critical incident, it's not the first time you're seeing it.
Right.
And so we wanted folks to have an exposure to that style of shooting simply because it was very probable that they may not have as precise a focus on their front sight simply because of the situation.
Right.
Just for a moment, giving a little bit of credit to the fact that you may be so overwhelmed by the situation that you do not have the faculties to redirect your focus away from the threat and to your sight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just trying to cover that base. Basically, it was our form of a contingency.
Yeah.
And we used to call it it was based off of the index of the weapon system on target. If that never changes, if it's always the same,
mm-hmm.
So when you mount the pistol, it's always the same.
Yeah.
You know, your sights are aligned, they're on the target where they should be. Then the focus is really not that important.
Right.
Whether you're looking at, because your body will naturally align those sights. It may not be perfect as if you were focused on the front sight,
but it's good enough.
But I was shooting pretty damn well without it. And then now that I fluctuate, but I'll do demos where sometimes I'll actually just be seeing the target, and I'll do demos where I'm actually seeing the sight. I don't know. It just depends.
Well, and what I do, and I know you use the same kind of sights that I do. You're a fan of the Trijicon HDs as well. The mm-hmm. reason why I like those sights is because they have a big, bright circle in the front of them. They've got a plain U-notch in the rear with tritium that is very unobtrusive. For the way that I shoot, it's very easy for me due to the index that I have, and I, you know, without – I don't like saying positive things about my shooting ability, but I have a very good index. And I can see the front sight enough so that if the circle of the sight is interrupted because it's not – quite settled into that U-notch, I can fix it, but it's not generally what I'm looking at. But once again, I've had people say that's point shooting. I've had people say it's other things. I don't agree with that. You know, I've shot out to 150 yards shooting the way that I shoot with a pistol and made hits, so I don't know. I found it interesting, though, because I made these two videos. I actually got one death threat from someone here in Cincinnati that was interesting.
You got a death threat?
Yep. Swear to God, I'll text it to you after the show. Because he started arguing. I finally banned him from the page and literally started messaging random Facebook users that liked the page too and was like passing messages along that way. Yeah, it was awesome. So we got to go to break. We'll talk about that more when we get back. Talking with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concepts. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfirerdgroup.com. This segment brought to you by Walther. Walther and the new PPX. So, talking with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concepts about whatever we come up with. We're sort of just winging it at this point because, hey, life is exciting when we do that. Jeff, are you still there?
I sure am.
So, yeah, apparently I make friends wherever I go. And like I said, you're going to go watch these videos afterwards now, aren't you? I can feel your interest through the phone line. That's like,
yes.
You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe you just didn't like me for other reasons. But it struck me as the impetus behind that. So, anyway, as far as another article that you recently wrote, we'll switch gears a little bit because I'm honestly tired of the whole point shooting thing. And I just wanted to see what you said because honestly, it's it's completely different than how I think of it. Not that you're wrong or I'm right, but it's just, it's funny to see like different people's thought processes and on what it is. You wrote an article recently about the Charlie Hebdo attacks in Paris, and why that was an operation that would probably be more successful in a place like France than it would necessarily be here. Just can you talk about that a little bit and some of the unknowns that maybe someone would have to deal with here, or really whatever direction you want to go with it?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think the first thing is you have to put it in context, which the context is that the country of France, by and large, does not have an armed police force such as what we have here in the United States. There are police that are armed, but to reference like the everyday beat cop, they are not. And so, you know, one of the greatest advantages that we have from a similar style attack is the fact that our first responding law enforcement officers are armed, and not only are they armed with pistols, but they're armed with rifles. And, you know, the patrol rifle program has really taken off since, it's been probably at least 10 years.
Yeah, North Hollywood, I think, is the impetus behind that.
Exactly. So the key difference between the two countries is the fact that we are an armed society. It is part of our culture.
Right.
So I feel like one of the things that I talked about in the article was for any type of terrorist attack to be successful, the terrorists have to develop a degree of control. You know, just a mad dash shooting spree. Like take the mall shooting that happened in Africa. I think it was last year.
Yeah.
They could have just started walking through the mall and just started shooting people left and right, which they kind of did. But what they were more interested in doing was in corralling as many, you know, it was more about how many could they get versus
right.
just the onesie twosies as people are fleeing. So they were trying to contain everything. They're trying to establish a degree of control.
Yeah.
And so it's in those critical moments, and those are moments. Those are like minutes.
Yeah.
That if their plans are disrupted because if they have to shift away from preying on the helpless to defending themselves against, you know, somebody who's hardened and willing to fight, it shifts their perspective. I always tell people if in the moment that they have to start worrying about their own safety, you know, they're no longer as much of a threat.
You mean everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face? I mean,
exactly. Yeah. Great line.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Mike Tyson is not given enough credit. I'm sorry. He's not.
Well, it's not. But Mike Tyson paraphrased it from Joe Louis.
Right.
So that's right. The thing. You got to trace it to its source.
Well, okay. But see, I'm of the younger generation. I only quote the secondary source. I don't actually bother to take the time to do the research to quote the primary source because my generation is lazy, Jeff. I mean,
exactly. I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
That would be funny.
Yeah.
So when you have a culture such as ours, where our law enforcement not only are armed, but they are trained. And, you know, I mean, I selfish promotion, obviously I don't feel they're trained enough. And that's one of our true passions is training folks at a professional level. And so, you know, we obviously, it's in our best interest, you know, our military, our fighting military, which I believe is the best fighting force the planet has ever seen, is busy fighting these terrorists on their own home soil to avoid them coming to our homeland.
Right.
And, you know, I use the term, kind of I use this phrase, protect the homeland.
Yeah.
And that's one method of protecting the homeland is taking the fight to the bad guys. But because we have such porous borders, we do know that terrorists have infiltrated our country and that there's a lot of things that are happening that nobody wants to talk about. But my belief is that the one thing that the terrorists have to their advantage is they have time.
Right.
And they have money. So those two are formidable weapons that they use. So the only thing that we can do to really be prepared for that is, you know, the eternal vigilance of just being continuing with our armed culture, our armed society, you know.
Right.
Our first responders need to be armed and they need to be prepared. And then I use the term loosely like Minutemen strategy.
Yeah.
The armed citizenry. You know, I think that that's the second line of defense. You know, first line, Well, first line of defense is our military going overseas. Second line of defense is our law enforcement protecting the homeland. Third line of defense is the armed citizenry. And I think that more people should take an active, a vested interest, I guess is a better way to put it, in their own personal safety, but also recognize that, I mean, you could be the difference between a horrendous, you know, massacre of some sort, or, you know, you can stand your ground and duke it out. And granted, there's no guarantee that you're going to survive that. That's what I always try to remind people. Hey, if these guys are coming to our home soil, make no mistake that they are the worst of the worst.
Yep.
And they're absolutely committed. It will be a fight to the death.
Yeah.
Either your death or their death, but somebody is dying.
Right.
And you better be mentally prepared for it, and you better be physically prepared for it, and you better have the training and equipment to support it.
Well, and it's, you know, I've had Dr. William April on the show before, and he talks about, you know, having your level of training and equipment selection meet your likely response. And in his, I'll paraphrase him here, and I apologize to William if I'm saying this wrong, but most people are going to do what they're going to do, whether or not it's a good idea. You know, I may advise people to be a good witness or do something like that, but if I saw someone walking into a mall with a rifle and start shooting people, I'd be very hard-pressed not to follow in after them to try and handle that, unless I had my children with me. You know, outside of that, I'd probably go in after them. So knowing what kind of response you are likely to undertake, whether or not it's a good idea, and having your training and equipment meet that, pretty much.
You know, here's the thing. You're playing the law of probability.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, there's no guarantees. I partially agree, but here's the thing. I am of the mindset, you know, and you can exclude me from and my kin from the normalcy of the general public.
Right.
But my mindset is that, you know, my training is never finished, that I will never quit, and that, you know, I stand ready to defend or protect against any threat,
yeah,
no matter what it is. And I think, you know, that not only is about my own family, protecting my family, but also protecting my country.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though I don't wear the uniform anymore, it is still, you know, still very important to me. So I kind of sit back and I think, and, you know, everybody plays these games. What if, what if, what,
yeah,
if, what if, what if? Well, I'm not saying that you need to frickin' carry, that you need to load up with a plate carrier and have a M4 at the ready wherever you go grocery shopping.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. But I was trying to emphasize to the general public that we need to take a better, or you personally need to take a better look at, because we see this happen so many times in our concealed carry classes. We're doing, like, I think we're doing 7 concealed carry classes this year. Makes up 1/3 of our training classes this year are all concealed carry.
Yeah.
That's a great sign of people being more interested in their personal safety. But also the fact is that we're debunking so many of these myths. You know, I am, it pains me to say this. A little part of me is dying as I say this, but I would rather somebody carry like a little .22 or .32 ACP
than nothing
than carry
at all.
Nothing.
Right. Right.
You know, I feel like it's the gateway drug. Get a little .22, a little .30, a little .38. You know, that's a gateway drug of sorts. You know, get them into the field, get them into the, you know, bring them close, and then through education, through awareness, through an understanding, they realize how ill prepared they really are.
Well,
to deal with just a criminal element, much less a, you know, fanatical, dedicated terrorist.
Well, and it's, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that actually, because the short, our industry likes to talk about equipment, and especially, you know, this is a favorite conversation. Are you carrying enough stuff and all that? For anyone that's intelligent and is actually interested in bettering themselves, the shortcomings of their equipment become readily apparent if they do spend any time with it. So
true.
It's not anything that we necessarily need to focus on as much as we do, you know, in my opinion. I'm trying to get away from it a little bit just because the conversation gets a little old and boring after a while. We've got to go to break.
Mm-hmm.
When we get back, we'll discuss this a little bit more. We'll see what upcoming projects you have, and I'm curious to see what you're excited for. From SHOT Show, I know we'll be a little behind, but still, I'd be curious. Anyway, we're talking with Jeff Gonzalez right now. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of firearms, finishes, so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Six Iron, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles, including Knights Armament. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. And I think through the magic of radio and Mr. Joe Strucker, that ad will have been read a lot cleaner when it's broadcast than it actually was in studio. Thank you, Joe, in advance. Please, I beg you. Anyway, we're talking with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concepts. Jeff, are you still there?
I am, and I hope you couldn't hear me laughing during that period. I'm sorry. I was trying to keep it in.
No, it's fine. Joe's intelligent enough to mute you when I don't actually want to hear what you have to say, just so that you're
smart move.
Yeah,
smart move.
Your heckling cannot be heard, and you know any random
curse. No, my heckling can be heard. You can't mute my heckling.
Oh,
my heckling is so it's Olympic grade. You can't mute it.
I can right now. Do you want to see? That's Joe. Hang up. No, don't hang up anymore.
I knew it. You did hang up on me.
No, you did. You did that. So anyway, I don't remember what we were talking about at all. We were talking about levels of preparation and.
Right on.
You know, yes. Equipment being the shortcomings of equipment becoming readily apparent if you actually go out and use it.
I agree, but I will also end this. We talked about ideology earlier.
Yeah.
Or the previous show, and we've had a lot of people who have come to they haven't put their gear to task well enough to really determine whether or not it is going to work. And a good case in point is like a lot of these newfangled methods of carrying that we see coming out, particularly for women.
Yeah,
we have in our concealed carry combatives class is very physical, a lot of movement, very dynamic, a lot of tension between the opponents. And we had a lot of women that were carrying off bodies, such as in purses.
Yeah.
And we even had one of those flashbang holsters, and they all failed as far as what they needed to be able to do, which was carry the weapon and have access to it.
Right.
And so, you know, that would not have come out. Those would not have been discovered had we not had that level of training to support it. So that's what I was going to add to it,
yeah.
Is that sometimes it's not just about getting out there and training, but training in the right manner to help. Because that's what you want to do. You want to train to failure.
Yeah. Well,
and that way you learn where your failure points are, and then you can work on them. Like the girls that had those flashbangs, they were very excited about them at first, but then afterwards they were like, yeah, not so much, because if I do have to scuffle, if I do have to roll around, if I have to do any physical access to it, can be severely limited. And I've seen that before. I mean, when the neck knife came out, everybody wanted to carry a neck knife.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, cool, check out my dog tags. Well, you don't know that's secretly a knife that I'm going to stab you in the face with.
As soon as
we start rolling around and start moving, you know, it's like a moving target trying to get a handle on it. And if
right.
you're so busy trying to get to that, and it's time-consuming, in the middle of a close-quarters fight, it's just not going to work out. So
out of curiosity, out of curiosity, were you making your blue steel face when you said the little thing about the neck knife? Because I really saw it in my mind, you know, the Zoolander blue. Anyway, fun for me at least. Well, as far as pressure testing gear goes or pressure checking gear, I'm glad you brought that up. Is that...
Mm-hmm.
One of the most overlooked things in the community, do you think, or at least one of the most overlooked things if you're getting started into the lifestyle?
Yes, I would say so. I would say that it's one of those things that gets a lot of people just really don't know that. They just kind of, you know, if you're starting off in this industry, it's a fairly steep learning curve.
Yes.
You know, we try not to scare people. I mean, obviously we don't want people to be nervous to the point where they don't seek out training.
Right.
But you know, sometimes when you put it in perspective and they realize how much, and this is probably the best thing, they realize what they don't know.
Right. Well, hopefully they realize what they don't know.
True.
As far as, here, I'll bring this up, and I'm not going to name the name of the holster because I don't, you know, I don't want to jump down that rabbit hole. But there is a very popular appendix carry holster that is how can I say something about this holster that that will not reveal which holster it is, at least on air, that attaches to the belt via clip. I'll say that.
Oh.
The thing about that is if your holster attaches to the belt via clip, that's fine if the clip is designed well. If the clip is not designed well, when you start rolling around, and I saw this in an ECQC class that I took with Craig Douglas, what happens is the gun in the holster comes off of the belt and ends up either on the ground or in the hand of the bad guy. And both of those are no bueno in my book. And this is a holster that is extremely popular, is extremely well-reviewed by people, I guess, that haven't seen the failure happen. But once again, there's all sorts of gear that seems fine until you go and use it, and, like, actually use it. So,
well, first of all, I agree with you. I think clips are horrible. I discourage people from using clips. They are the only clips that I would – and I don't even go so far as to endorse or recommend, is if you're using plastic clips, you need to move to metal clips.
Yeah.
You need to have at least spring steel clips. Those are going to be marginally – those are going to be better than the plastic one, but still not as secure.
Right.
And I have to ask, people, what is the reason behind the clips? Why do you use the clips? And the number one reason that I get, and this is what really gets under my skin, the number one reason I get, convenience.
Yep. Take the holster off
and I'm like,
easily. So,
and I'm like, okay, you're right. Keep doing what you're doing.
There's
nothing that I can say when the response is about convenience. There's nothing I can say that's going to change their mind per se. They're just going to have to experience it. And in this last class, I just got done doing our first class of the year. It happened to be a concealed carry tactics down in Florida.
Yeah.
And we had 15 shooters, and we had four holsters that had clips on them.
Yeah.
Of those four, three of them came out. You're in the class and had to be separated manually.
Well, and one thing I will say, and here's a caveat, and I want to make sure that we're not discouraging people entirely, especially I was talking with Raven Concealment. They've got a new holster coming out, the Eidolon, I want to say, or Eidolon. I don't know how they pronounce it. They're all intelligent in Greek. But they have to, and I've not any experience with it, so these clips could also suck like all the other clips that I've played with that are made of plastic. But they've got a new plastic clip that's coming out that is supposed to fix a lot of those issues. I am looking forward to buying one of those holsters and playing with it. Just wanted to give fair credit to Raven Concealment and not throw them completely under the bus because, like I said, they've got something new and exciting that is supposed to fix those problems. We'll see. But so as far as here's another interesting, oh God, interesting. I've gone both shows without saying it, I think. Interesting is one of those words that I use on the air like frequently, and I'm trying to break myself of the habit. Something else that I read a while ago that I thought would be of use to the listeners to talk about is you wrote an article about weapons access in colder weather and having having your draw stroke not change dependent on, you know, how you dress yourself. And I'm reaching back, so correct me if I'm wrong. But as far as cold weather carry goes, or when you start adding layers, how important is it to try and have your draw stroke be as similar to the one that you're used to already?
Well, continuity is critical in any high-stress situation. Anything that's going to put you under stress, it's very important that you maintain as much continuity as possible. So with regards to carrying concealed, here's the way that I try to answer that question. If you have seasonal issues that you have to deal with and you can't maintain the same draw stroke because of clothing, then you will have to theoretically master two different draw strokes. and theoretically maintain proficiency and sustainability with those two different draw strokes. So if you were to say to achieve mastery of one draw stroke would require, let's just throw an arbitrary number out there for argument's sakes, 1,000 repetitions. All right, if it takes you 1,000 repetitions to master the draw stroke, then it would logically take 1,000 draw strokes to master the other draw stroke. So if you're willing to put the time and energy and effort into mastering those draw strokes with 2,000 reps each, then I say go for it.
Yeah.
But the reality that I see is people don't do that for the reason that we stated earlier, that they don't change their ideology, because they're lazy.
Yeah.
So I can, if asking 1,000 reps, if I could say, hey, if you did 1,000 reps and you achieved mastery level, I still wouldn't get people that would do it.
Right.
If I could give them a pill that says, upon completion of 1,000 reps, you will be master level, whatever it is.
They wouldn't do it because they're lazy.
They're still not going
to
do it.
I got to interrupt real quick because we have to go to break. We're talking with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concepts. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by Boresight Solutions. Boresight Solutions offers high-end custom modification services for hard-use guns. See why industry, law enforcement, and military professionals have chosen to carry Boresight Solutions firearms. Pat Rogers, Craig Douglas, and Kyle Lamb, just to name a few, have entrusted Boresight Solutions with their personal carry guns. When I'm not busy torture testing project guns, I trust my life to Boresight Solutions pistol. Quality craftsmanship, improved ergonomics, and amazing attention to detail are what you will receive with every custom Boresight Solutions gun. Boresight Solutions, tools to live by. So, we are finishing up our two-part mega episode with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concepts. Super mega episode. Jeff, are you
still? Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? Sunday. So, I need to do a Ballistic Radio ad in the style of 1980s monster truck announcer.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Wouldn't it be? So, anyway.
Yes.
We're to the last segment of our second show here. I know SHOT Show's already over, so this is kind of we're doing this in the wrong order, but you know, whatever. What are you excited about at SHOT Show that you know is coming out? Have you seen anything that looks like super interesting that you're waiting to get hands on with, or you know?
There are a few things that I am interested for sure. One of them is the new Leupold scope. I'm going to be curious to see that thing. You know, this is a good example of trying to keep my expectations reasonable, you know, because right away I look at it and I am a little put off by the shape and the design and
right.
whatnot, but I'm trying to allow performance to be the driving factor there. So I'll be curious to look at that. That should be, you know, interesting. You know, I mean, there's a couple of things. You know, Magpul's releasing a plethora of new stuff. I'm excited to see what they've got. You know, the new Glock mag I think is going to be really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, $15 for a Glock mag.
One that actually works. Damn. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm curious about that. I mean, we've got you know, we've got a few other little things that will be, you know, selfish promotion. You know, we've got our new Mark VI coming out. We've got the Pro Carry from Robar Industries. You know, so there's a few things. I'm disappointed that the knives sold so quickly. We won't have any knives at SHOT, I think. I think our there was a couple of thoughts that maybe we would have some available, but I don't think we're going to get any for right. production at SHOT, unfortunately.
Yeah. The Leupold scope that you're talking about, and for those that have not seen, I posted a link on our Facebook page. I'm actually going to get to that. I'm going to be at the ATACS range day 2 days from now, which is actually 7 days ago in this weird radio like time warp that we're on. But what it is they've got a new red dot coming out, and then they've got a 6-power only optic that sits behind the red dot, and they've got this weird like prismatic thing. It looks weird. It looks like a Z, almost like a flattened
yeah.
Z, with the red dot sitting in front. Radio is really terrible for describing this, but the cool thing is that what the idea behind it is that you shift your eyes. You don't really need to move your head. You don't need to do much of anything except shift your eyes, and you go from a zero magnification to a six magnification with their MWR, I think they call it. I'm probably wrong because whatever. But they've got their range-finding reticle in it, and it should be pretty slick. That's something that I ran into and when I was testing variable optics is last year on the Knights Armament, was they were cool, but the time you took to adjust what magnification you were at, you know, that doesn't work that well as far as if you've got a low percentage shot that suddenly pops up far away, you have to take it at whatever magnification you're at, and sometimes that's the one you need and sometimes it's not, and vice versa.
That's very true.
So I'm curious to play with that. I know trying to think, Beretta's got some cool stuff coming out. LWRC's got a 45 caliber carbine, I want to say, that I saw.
Oh, it's a subgun.
Is that what
it's
that
like
is?
Yeah, it's their version of a 45 caliber subgun. And I looked at it, and it looks I was talking to them.
It looks sweet.
It looks very nice. So I'll definitely be handling that bad boy for sure.
Yeah. You know, it'd be nicer if I could get it in its subgun configuration, but, you know, I'd take a semi-automatic civilian legal version if they decide to come out with that and SBR it. It might be cool.
That was what I asked them. I was like, because it's been so long since we talked about subguns, I asked the question, I'm like, refresh my memory, but a subgun is still considered an SBR, right?
Yeah. I guess there's an argument to be made that, I get this question a lot, is there any use for a pistol caliber carbine like that? For fun-wise, for me, yes. For usefulness-wise, no. But there are agencies that still want that. I mean, it's not like a completely dead concept anymore, is it?
I have a very hard time justifying a subgun other than just wanting it for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah.
Because size and weight, compare that to an M4. I guess, you're right. If you can define your mission and then a subgun is the best tool to fulfill your mission requirements, then so be it.
Right.
I have a hard time seeing that nowadays, but it's not to say that it's not possible.
Right.
That there aren't departments that need the subgun for some reason or another, and that one sure does look pretty nice. And I'll get my fingers on it, play with it a little bit, see what maybe get one to the range and crank off a few rounds just for giggles.
Go from there, yeah. I saw there's another company that's doing MP5s and 300 blackout, which struck me as kind of slick. You know, I wasn't quite sure why I would want that over like an SBR AR, but SHOT Show is one of those times, it's one of the few times anymore, and the NRA show in April is the other one, where I actually get excited about guns briefly. You know, it's like, what new stuff is coming out? I feel like I did when I was still a teenager and, you know, well before this ever became work, and it's like, you know, it's that, what cool stuff is coming out, you know?
Yeah. So,
what other projects do you have going on, man, as far as training goes? You're doing tours, you're staying mostly in the Texas area.
We are going to be all over the country this year. You know, for those that don't know, we partnered up with Alias Training, so they're going to be doing a lot of our bookings and whatnot. So we're going to be traveling quite a bit. We've got a lot of new places that we're going to already this year.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that. As far as new projects are concerned, this year we've got last year we kind of got hit up to do leadership stuff, so we're doing a lot more leadership kind of scenarios, not scenarios, but seminars, I suppose, is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And then I'm really happy to be doing we're working with Panteo Productions to do a couple of videos with them that we start like literally right after SHOT Show. We'll be getting together with those guys. We're going to be doing kind of like three different videos. We're going to be doing a video on red dot sights on pistols.
Yeah.
Then we're going to be doing a video segment on concealed carry, and then we're going to be doing a video segment on rifles.
Yeah.
So should be exciting stuff for sure.
No, that's as far as red dots on pistols. What are your thoughts on that, real quick? We've not got much time left, but
sure.
That seems to be another one of those areas in the industry that you either love them or hate them.
Well, true. And again, you got to define your mission. There is a lot of value to them. I've been using them now for several years. It was an experiment that I say showed me, again, pros and cons that, again, once you understand it and you can define your mission. So the benefits to having the red dot on a concealed carry type pistol are that you have anytime viewability. You have the ability, the range that you can hit at is ridiculous with those things. It's like it's not even fair anymore.
Right.
And then you have some cons, which are size. Mm-hmm. It makes it a little bit more difficult to conceal, especially if you're a small frame guy like myself. It's a little bit harder to conceal that.
Warrior sized, Jeff. Warrior sized. So. Or schmedium, one of those.
Anyhow, and then the problem that you run into as well is that there are not as many holsters, concealment type holsters that will accommodate the RDSs. So I have, all of my holsters are configured to accommodate both slides with and without.
Yeah.
So that's not a big deal for me, but I know a lot of people run into that problem. So I'm a fan of them. Do I carry it on my everyday gun? Not really, because I just wanted.
I'm going to have to interrupt just because we've reached the end of the show. I guess this means I'm going to have to bring you back on to finish your thoughts on the red dots. I appreciate you joining us today, man, very much. Thanks for coming on. So
you bet.
Hey, remember, everybody, you can listen to past shows at BallisticRadio.com. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.